Motherhood is not something that we all know directly in our lives, but we all experience it at least indirectly. We've all been born of a woman. This is something common to humanity and is one of our deepest bonds with Jesus, our brother, who was born of the Virgin Mary. Motherhood can be viewed poorly. It can be seen as something to be endured, an interruption to life and a career, or something terribly painful and questionable in its goodness. But when we think about motherhood theologically, we see it differently. It's something that God has designed with great purpose and goodness. It's a beautiful thing that marks one of the distinctive roles of women in society. It's something to celebrate, even in its pain and risk. Furthermore, in the expectation of life that pregnancy holds, there is a great picture of our expectation of eternal life. Today on the podcast, we're considering God's purposes in pregnancy and birth. Hello and welcome to the Center for Christian Living podcast. My name is Chase Kuhn. I'm in Sydney at Moore Theological College, and my guest today is remote in the Blue Mountains of New South Wales. Jody McIver is joining us from Blackheath, where she lives and works. She works as a midwife, and she serves there with her husband in ministry, and she also has the privilege of being a mother of three children. Jody, it's great to have you today on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me along, Chase. It's lovely to be here with you.
Thank you. We're here talking about your new book that's just come out this year with YouthWorks Media, Bringing Forth Life, God's Purposes in Pregnancy and Birth. Mm-hmm. And I've read it and really enjoyed it. Not the kind of book that I typically go to pick up off a shelf, but I was so glad that you sent it to me to read, and I really benefited from it. The reason why I say I wouldn't normally read it is because my wife loves reading books like this. My wife has a deep love for pregnancy and thinking about women through pregnancy. She worked as a doula in the past, so she's the one that has a bookshelf full of these books. But for me this time, I got to read it, and I'm looking forward to passing it on to her.
Excellent. It always rubs off on those around us, I think, too.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And I'll talk to you about your audience in a minute, but just tell me, what brought this book about? I mean, you talk about this a little bit in your personal journey in the book, but why did you write a book like Bringing Forth Life?
Yeah, it was certainly never planned out that I'd write a book at all, but I worked as a midwife and was involved in church ministry as well. And the two were kind of entirely separate in my life for a long time. It probably wasn't until I actually had my own children and went through these experiences firsthand or from the other side that I started to think to myself, this is a really significant transition, and these experiences impact on us, not just physically and emotionally, but spiritually, and our whole transition in lifestyle and relationships and everything, identity ultimately. And then I started to wonder about Christian perspectives on this, and there weren't a lot of resources on this topic. There are a lot of great Christian parenting resources, but about that actual beginning experience of pregnancy and birth and becoming a mother, there certainly wasn't much from an Australian perspective, at least. And the trigger was a local prominent minister who posted on Facebook about wanting a resource for a woman in his congregation who was feeling anxious in the lead up to birth, like what's out there? And thousands of Facebook friends that he had gave their little ideas. But I realized there wasn't that concise resource which brings together a theological as well as physical perspective on what actually happens in our bodies and integrating those different things too, I guess. So I thought, oh, well, maybe that's something I could contribute given the various different roles that I have held. So yeah, that's how it came about.
That's fantastic. And I actually think you've done a very good job of it, if I might say so.
Thank you.
I mean, you're right. We read books about topics, but we rarely bring together how our faith deeply impacts our views of those topics. And I think this is a topic that was ripe for the picking. I mean, it's a great topic to explore theologically and a great topic to think about, particularly from a view of humanity and especially womanhood.
Yeah.
I really, really benefited from reading that. And I really love the way that you think through a biblical theological vision for motherhood and womanhood. And you really try to frame up how each of these things take their place in a bigger picture of what God is doing in the world for humanity. And I think that gives us this lovely vision for especially women in the world, which is fantastic. So thank you for doing that.
Yeah, I don't think I quite realized how central birth is to the Bible and to God's work in the world until I actually sat down and thought about it. Yeah,
it's great. I love it. I think one of the things you do quite well early on is you try to explore the significance of women in the world uniquely as women. And I guess one of the places where women are most unique is their ability to carry children and have children, birth children. And I love the way that you explore the uniqueness of that role within women, even in points of weakness per se, what we might call weakness, or what the Bible might even call weakness, how that actually signals to us something rich and wonderful even about gospel truth. I'm just going to read a little excerpt here that I think is really interesting. It says that our contribution to this world as women far surpasses our fertility. Women who don't enter into motherhood, whether willingly or unwillingly, have different opportunities for growth, development, and life-giving work. And Jesus' example of life without children honors that path. So on the one hand, you talk about the goodness of women even apart from motherhood. Some women will never be mothers. Some women may never birth a child. But at other points, you go on to talk about, too, the richness of how women's bodies are always preparing for that work and signaling that work in there. Can you just give us a little bit of an insight into that as we think about the uniqueness of women?
Yeah, I think it's a common experience for young women, particularly not always to see the goodness of their bodies. Obviously, our culture as a whole, but the church as well, we haven't always focused on the wonderful design of the female body and its amazing strength and power, not for military defeat or various other things, but that the way our bodies are made is to enable them to do this amazing work, which also reflects God's life-giving work. And the things that we can view or focus on, you know, the way fat deposits are laid on our body or things like that, it's all to help cater our bodies to do this amazing work. We're reminded of this month in, month out with the cycles of our body. But that's not actually a bad thing, however painful and frustrating it can be. It's an amazing privilege and wonder to be able to share with God in bringing forth life in this way. And yeah, we need to talk about the goodness of that.
Yeah, I think the uniqueness of the body's design, I mean, you're very scientific because of your background as a midwife, so you're able to give some really unique insights, at least for a layperson like me and as a man like me, to biological functions, physiological functions of the woman's body, and even thinking about the deliberate design of menstruation and even about the set number of eggs within the woman's body from infancy or even before that time. It's just remarkable how you paint that picture, which I think is a really grand vision of the uniqueness and the intricacy of a woman's body. And I guess that's really helpful for two different audiences, because this is where I want to get to the audiences of your book. It's helpful for me as a man who doesn't have a woman's body and understand the workings and even the feelings of a woman's body. I think that you retrieve a really beautiful vision of the woman's body, something that can feel ailing to a woman to monthly menstruate. You actually talk about the beauty and the wonder of that design. But then also for women that are not pregnant or may never fall pregnant, that actually there is something there even about their body that they can appreciate in God's beauty and design for them that I think is really spectacular. So thank you for helping me as an outsider.
My pleasure.
But I also want to say to you, I think the book is primarily purposed for women that are pregnant. Am I right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's spoken to a woman who is pregnant or who is thinking about becoming pregnant, but I certainly don't want to limit that. Like, absolutely. Men who are becoming fathers or people who are becoming grandparents or even just friends and church community who want to support couples or women in this, I think we all need to see this grander picture of where childbearing and birth fits in its significance in the whole universe. So I think it's a great resource for anyone supporting people in these circumstances. Yeah.
I agree with that. It's part of our common humanity. We're all born from someone. We all have a mother.
That's right.
That's really important. We may never be a father or a mother ourselves, but we will know plenty of fathers and mothers, and we will keep watching the reproduction of humanity. And so it's really a vital resource. But as you think about helping pregnant women, one of the things that I think you work towards beautifully is, again, helping them to come to terms with the transition and change that comes upon them. And I think you do that wonderfully in two different ways, but they're interconnected. That is that you talk about the physiological changes to their body, and you try to show those as really positive things, not negative things, which I think is really fantastic. But then you also talk about some of the emotional and spiritual preparation that happens as well, which I also think is fantastic. I'd love to talk about the physical ones first, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Many women find the changes to their body quite overwhelming. Mm. And I think you give representation to a number of different views that people will have, from really positive to really negative views of those changes in their body. Some people will find it really uncomfortable. Some people will find it a really welcome time.
Mm.
So I think one of the things I like is that you're showing how each of those changes comes with purpose.
Mm.
That is that the body is preparing and nurturing and giving itself for another. Can you just give us a quick snapshot? You go into detail on this in the book, but would you mind just speaking to this and why?
Yeah.
This is a beautiful way the body's made to help accommodate this new life.
Yeah, I think you're right. It is a uniquely vulnerable experience physically, unless perhaps you've gone through a chronic illness or something else really significant. But often this is the first time in our lives when we're not in control of our bodies in the same way that we usually are. And they're changing quite rapidly. And that can be really uncomfortable. It is really uncomfortable for everyone to varying extents, I think, but not just in the way that we feel, but in the way we see ourselves as well. And if we've prized our athletic ability or our success at work or these kind of things have been real driving forces in our identity, then it's a significant experience where those are suddenly not part of our lives in the same way. And we do reframe the way that we see ourselves, I think. And not that we'll never regain those things, but the way that our body works in birth, but even before that in pregnancy, is really revealing to us, I think, the cost of bringing forth life. Our body's nourishing our baby, and we're feeling that in the way that it's stretching or aching or vomiting or whatever. But through that, I think that we're experiencing that kind of biblical love, that laying down of one's own needs for the sake of another. And our bodies take the lead in that journey for us and begin us on that journey, which will be ongoing into parenting and for dads and for everyone as well. But there's that unique kind of gradual growth in experience of that right from the beginning, I think. And then at birth, ultimately, that big moment of our body opening up one way or another to give life to our new baby.
Yeah. It's a real shift, isn't it? I mean, parenting is sanctifying because somebody is now completely dependent on you. You know, if you're married, then you know somebody depends on you to some degree, but there's still relative independence in one sense.
Absolutely.
But once you have a child, it is completely needy and helpless and everything depends on you. It is nice that you get to prepare for that in one sense as your body is changing uniquely as a mother, I think.
Yeah.
But I love the way too that you show how the things that could easily be thought of so negatively, the pains, the discomfort, the changing shape of your body can actually be thought of so positively. This is a sign of life. This is a sign of the life that is to come. And even after the birth, I don't know if it was Beyonce or what, but talks about the mommy pouch that comes afterwards in her tummy. That's actually a marker of something wonderful, not of disgrace. It's not that you've somehow passed your prime, but actually you've entered into a new phase of life that is now marked out by, in one sense, a stretch mark or a scarring or whatever it may be, of a life that's come from you. I mean, that's quite remarkable.
It is absolutely remarkable. I don't want to take away from the hardship of that as well and the pain that it entails and the genuine losses that we feel in this transition. But I think if we can understand that God universally really brings new life out of loss, and obviously we see that in the gospel, but in this experience as well, I think it's one of genuine losses and hardships and pain, but from that unique vulnerability and from that loss of self to an extent, God is working to bring new life in us as well as our babies. So many mothers come out the other end feeling a little bit lost for a while, but that's not to say that God's not at work in them, shaping them. I mean, like you mentioned, the scars, we do often have always almost scars on our bodies after birth, but we see Jesus take great pride in the scars that he had from giving us new life and birth, and he shows them to his friends. And I'm not suggesting we all have to wear midriff tops or anything like that, but it's a different way of seeing our scars, that they're scars of life-giving. And in the bigger picture, that matters a whole lot more than our exact figure or anything like that.
Yeah. I mean, this is maybe going a little bit off script from your book, but certainly building on principles you have there. As you encourage women, as they let go of things, as they let go of a career, as they let go of maybe a bit of body image, as they let go of things that in one sense have to go in order to accommodate this new life, how do you encourage them in the gospel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's two sides to that. One is I don't think motherhood should be our whole identity. We're absolutely contributing in lots of different ways. But there's a very real sense, like you're saying, that for a time, this takes over a whole great deal of not just our physical selves, but our minds and our sleep and our emotions. And it's very all-consuming for a period. And that is daunting. I mean, I was terrified of having children myself because I knew to an extent what it would entail from my experience as a midwife. And it is uncomfortable and a real shift from what our lives have looked like up to that point. But I think seeing that in light of the gospel just changes that and helps us understand how what we're doing is a great, important work, walking in Jesus' footsteps and bearing that cost to bring forth life. And that's so significant and wonderful.
I think the identity piece of your book is so helpful in thinking about identity all around, and I really appreciate that. Break from our program, I have a few things to bring to your attention. First, I want to point you to the book that we've been discussing in today's episode. Jodi McIver has recently published Bringing Forth Life, God's Purposes in Pregnancy and Birth. This book is an excellent resource for those considering pregnancy, in the midst of a pregnancy, or supporting someone through pregnancy. It's full of practical wisdom about women's bodies, pregnancy and birth, as well as theological insights about how each of these things fits within God's broader purposes for humanity. I encourage you to check it out on YouthWorks Media's website, youthworksmedia.net. That's youthworksmedia.net. Second, I've mentioned a few times a new initiative that we're taking for the CCL podcast, where we're really hoping to interact with more listeners like you. Many of you have burning ethical questions or scenarios that you'd like advice about, and we'd love to hear from you. Send us your issues and listen out for an answer in our upcoming episodes, where we'll begin to feature a short segment on your ethical challenges. I am really grateful for those who have already sent through excellent issues, and we're really hoping to be addressing these in future episodes soon. So if you'd like to hear about an issue, please get in touch through our contact page on our website. Now let's get back to our program. I want to transition a little bit for a moment to thinking about loss that comes with it and of a different kind, because you do address quite early on that sometimes pregnancy can be met with real fear, but sometimes real realized fear. Yeah. That is that sometimes people lose in pregnancy. Sometimes people can't fall pregnant. Sometimes they miscarry. Sometimes there's stillborns. How do you console people through a gospel lens with that loss even, because I think you do that very well in your book again about how you keep the gospel front and center in either the birth of a child or even the loss of a child.
Yeah, there's absolutely a huge range in the extent of the costs we bear in bringing forth life. So for some women, it is just the more relatively minor experiences, while others experience tragedy or trauma or grief in these circumstances. And I think firstly, we really just need to acknowledge that. If we're acknowledging the goodness of life, then equally we're acknowledging the tragedy of death and loss. And I know a lot of the women that I talk to who've gone through those experiences themselves talk about the importance of acknowledging that in an ongoing way and not just moving on and forgetting the child that someone has born and has died. But I think equally in valuing those women's experiences, however short this life was, they've still brought forth life, and that has significance for eternity. Even if life is short on this world, God's picture of life goes far beyond that, and little lives are still pointing towards that hope of eternal and full life that we can have in Jesus. So I think there's a sense in which we're all experiencing the groaning in the pains of childbirth in this broken world now, but that's not the end. And there is a hope of new birth and of eternal life. That doesn't take away from the sadness now, but it does value these hard experiences that women and families are undertaking.
You have some beautiful ways of putting it in your book, that painful memories become memories of pain. And I think that was a turn of phrase you might have used in there.
I have to credit one of the women in my Bible study for that phrase. Yes, it's really helpful there, I think.
Yeah, I think I've said it right, if I remember correctly. But also just the way that you look at Romans 8 and talk about the groaning there isn't pain without an end, a destination, but you're right that it's actually towards a beautiful rebirth, if you will, a new creation that we're waiting for.
Yeah, that's one of the unique things about labor pain, I guess, is that unlike other pain in our bodies, which is because it's injured or ill, labor pain is moving towards something, it's achieving something, and it is painful, but it's that pain with a purpose. So I think there is something there in that Romans 8 passage that is the hardness of many things in this world, but that's what's moving us towards ultimate relief and joy and life.
As you've talked to women that have lost, and I've talked to quite a few in my ministry and fathers as well, I should say.
Yeah.
You're right. Memory is important for them. And I know particularly with people that have had stillborn children, I've certainly stumbled in, you know, numbering too few children because I've not counted among them the stillborn child or something. How have you found it most helpful to engage with those that have suffered loss and maybe feel that pain acutely, maybe around Memorial Day, you know, whether a birthday or other significant moments? How have you been able to love and encourage people with gospel truth at those moments?
Yeah, I mean, I've very much had to draw on the stories of various other women who've shared with me on these experiences, as well as many others for the book, because it's not something I've personally gone through myself. But I think the big things that stand out to me are that idea of just sitting with people in their grief and allowing that to be. And they talk often retrospectively about how the Psalms are helpful in that they move from that despair and that crying out to God towards that continual trust in his goodness. So I think that's significant for some people. I mean, it's different for everyone. Some women don't feel that great sense of loss, particularly if it's an early miscarriage. And so I think we have to respect different experiences. But for those who are grieving a child, yeah, like you said, acknowledging that child and acknowledging that child as life, a life who is now living with Jesus has been really significant for some of them as well. And ultimately, I think it's been beautiful to see the way that God has worked through some of these women's lives and helped them to reach out to others and to bear with others in their burdens. But it's an awful experience when what should be a time of new life and beginnings is accompanied by that tragedy of ending as well.
Yeah. Thank you for your wisdom on that. One of the other things you really help with in your book is talking about risks and some of the kind of prenatal care that women and fathers too can expect as they begin visiting for ultrasounds and being offered different tests. Now, we've done an extended episode on pre-pregnancy screening with Professor Jonathan Morris, and I'll certainly refer our listeners back to that for a little bit longer discussion. But just briefly, what is your encouragement? Because often this time could be one of great anxiety. That is that people are really eager about the life, or at least hopeful about the life, but there's also real fear that accompanies that. And modern medicine doesn't seem to help with that, I think. How do you encourage women as they're going through that prenatal screening or whatever it may be?
Yeah, these are really tricky topics to navigate for people because I don't think they're always fully versed in exactly what the tests entail or what the potential outcomes of that testing are. So often women will want to undertake any testing they can for the sake of their baby. But the sad reality of our current medical system is that a lot of that genetic testing in pregnancy is with the purpose of enabling women to terminate a pregnancy if the baby's found to have a particular syndrome. And there's not things that can be done to help those babies. Rather, it's a selective process of who do we want to go on to birth. And so I think that is really important to be aware of. And it's not always clearly explained in busy antenatal appointments. So being able to think through that stuff ahead of time makes a huge difference because some testing won't help you if you wouldn't choose to terminate the pregnancy regardless. Then all it does is create this anxiety, and particularly because screening tests don't give you definite answers. They give you answers of high risk or low risk, which are still very arbitrary figures of 1 in 200 or things like this. So it's worth considering these things and being aware that with pregnancy and with birth, just because the doctor recommends it isn't necessarily a course that you should take because they may have a very different set of values about these things to you. And like you said, we are in a very medicalized model of pregnancy and birth at the moment. It is fear-driven, and there's a lot of sadness in that because not everything that we do is necessarily helping us or our babies. And fear is a reality of pregnancy, I think, for almost everyone. But fear is healthy to some extent in that it draws us to rely and trust on God. And that's a great attribute of fear. But I don't think it should be guiding our course in the experience of pregnancy and birth, which is not an illness. It's not, you know, we need to respond when things are wrong, and there are wonderful medical interventions that can save lives. But I don't think that should be the framing of this experience, but it can feel like that in the hospital system at times.
Yeah. Well, I'm so grateful for your book because one of the things it does is actually help to educate, which I think removes some of the unknowns, which often drive fear and anxiety. And so it doesn't give you a promise of control over every facet of your pregnancy or even anything else, but it does help you to be more aware and go in heads up. And I think even giving good practices of what it looks like to have an experience of some control over your delivery, even in the way that you move about things, pace things, and some of the ways that fear could drive us towards quicker reactions might actually set you back in your delivery process rather than actually going in with ease in some extent. I think just that kind of education is fantastic. And so you've given us a great resource here.
Yeah, that's right. In many Western countries now, we don't just respond when there is an abnormality. We are actually intervening earlier on to prevent the possibility of that actually happening. And that can let us down at times. So it is worth being aware of the way that our system works and being empowered, I guess, to make decisions about the way we want to go.
Yeah. Well, Jody, I thank you so much for your book. Thank you for the real positive picture, a theological picture of womanhood and pregnancy and God's plans and purposes for us as human beings, in particular with females and their unique role. And I'm so grateful for the work that you've done on this with this study. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Chase. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And thanks for sharing it with your listeners.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jody.
To benefit from more resources from the Center for Christian Living, please visit ccl.more.edu.au, where you'll find a host of resources, including past podcast episodes, videos from our live events, and articles published through the center. We'd love for you to subscribe to our podcast and for you to leave us a review so more people can discover our resources. On our website, we also have an opportunity for you to make a tax-deductible donation to support the ongoing work of the center. We always benefit from receiving questions and feedback from our listeners, so if you'd like to get in touch, you can email us at ccl@more.edu.au. As always, I would like to thank More College for its support of the Center for Christian Living, and to thank my assistant Karen Bielhartz for her work in editing and transcribing the episodes. The music for our podcast was generously provided by James West.